You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
Hi, welcome to Bookworm. This is Michael Silverblatt, and I'm very happy today because my guest is Steve Dickerson. He is the sales director of a group called Small Press Distribution. Now, as careful listeners of Bookworm know, I'm very much in love with books, and knowing about the new writers and what's really happening in the literary world involves knowing what's happening from the small presses all over the country. When I was a young man, I could be found worm-like on my belly, writhing through the bookshelves of the 8th Street bookstore, late, dearly departed 8th Street bookstore in Manhattan of my childhood, looking for the new books and finding the strangest things early on. Robert Walser, when he was published only in short excerpts from the University of Texas Press, or Jane Ann Phillips in her first appearance from small presses. Dorothy Allison, too, has made her way into the world from the small presses. This is the breeding ground, the stewing ground for American fiction, American literary fiction. And small press distribution is the only distributor that carries distinctly literary fiction. They have a great large catalog that comes out several times a year. They have an 800 number. I'm going to give it to you now and periodically during the show. It's 800-869-7553. And they really cover the waterfront of the literary world. Steve Dickerson is, I believe, an artist as well as a sales director, which befits an organization which is somewhere between a business and a nonprofit. Can you tell about Small Press Distribution?
Yeah, sure, Michael. Long before we, meaning that I was not involved in it, but in 1969, a few small poetry presses in Berkeley, California, got together with rare book dealer Peter Howard of Serendipity Books and said, "Why don't you distribute us?" And Peter said, "Well, I'll give it a try." Very quickly, he realized that it wasn't a money-making venture and it became a nonprofit corporation. This was in the very early 70s. And the first director of SPD was Jack Shoemaker, who later went on to become the chief editor for North Point Press. Throughout that time, small press distribution grew to the point where we are now with about 300-400 active literary presses concentrating on poetry and fiction, literary essays, books on art, etc.
Well, I have to point out, you see, many listeners don't know what a small press is. And, you know, it's sort of an underground. We are, in a sense, those of us who love small presses and those editors and distributors and writers, we are the literary underground of America, essentially. And, you know, what defines, what characterizes a small press book?
Well, to me, a lot of the sort of philosophy of a small press is basically that an attempt to avoid becoming a corporate press where the emphasis is put on the bottom line, making a dollar. And the presses are really concentrating on putting out books that they love to produce and make and promoting the writers that they believe in and really to the expense of all other issues and putting out really finely made books, presenting the work in the best possible fashion, and really doing this against the current of the market.
I think that listeners who have heard so many conversations about the NEA and things about public radio have to be, in a way, reminded that you are the audience for the small press book, that many, many a time a young writer, you know, is dreaming about agents and the career in New York, but really the way up as a writer is through the community. First of all, one's own literary community, through a small press, and a group like Small Press Distribution takes these books and makes them nationally available. Once upon a time, you would hear about these books that existed in other cities, and you'd have to go, I never minded, searching through bookstores high and low. And in the process, of course, you'd come upon many other things as well. Now, it's possible within your own city to find books by the young poets of, say, Austin, Texas, or Missoula, Montana. We are part of a network, and small press distribution brings them all together. I wanted to know, how does a book become a small press sensation?
Many ways, in the same way that a book may become a trade house sensation, but minus the massive advertising campaign. So there's a lot of word of mouth. There's a lot of sense in which the author is out with the public, reading from the work, meeting people, being on the radio perhaps. But a lot of it really has to be communication amongst readers and amongst writers as well. And that's, to me, that seems the greatest sense. I mean, the only way that I would have known about many of these books is through writers in particular that come to me, but readers in general.
I know that sometimes what happens, it's amusing because, you know, it's as if the small presses are doing the work for the editors at the New York houses. I know, for instance, that Morgan Endrickin, traveling in the Pacific Northwest, discovered the Native American writer Sherman Alexie because his books were selling so well in bookstores up there. He'd been up there, Alexie had, for a reading, had really created a sensation. I gather he's sort of almost a reader like Franz Liszt was, a musician, creating mass hysteria. And so before you knew it, Atlantic Grove was publishing the new novel by Sherman Alexie, and we wouldn't really have it unless there had been this sort of constant interest. Now, I have in front of me a pile of books here, and a lot of things are going to come up in the course of this conversation. For instance, next up in our line of hits from small presses, books that you can find by ordering them, actually, from small press distribution, and what you would have to do is to call 1-800-869-7553. You can just ask them for a copy of their catalog. But I know that anyone I know, who I care about, would want a copy of Making It Up. This is the transcript of an almost legendary evening at the St. Mark's Church. What happened was Kenneth Koch and Allen Ginsberg were brought together, hosted by Ron Padgett, and they improvised spontaneous poems in public in front of a packed audience on a very hot summer night. These are very crazy poems because Kenneth Koch, who's New York pop, is suddenly working in the territory of Ginsberg Hip, and Ginsberg, the hipster, is suddenly doing poems about Tarzan and Popeye of the sort that the New York school would like. And you've got these instant epics that occurred in public and this book, which is a transcript, not just of the poems, but of the whole evening, the whole interaction. Who published this?
A very small press in New York. Catchword Papers is the name of the press. And it's edited by a fellow in New York who has done a couple other books only, and very small chapbooks, one by Bernadette Mayer, another New York school poet, and the other by Charles Henry Ford, who was an American surrealist from back in the 20s who is still active.
Now, is that a Larry Rivers on the cover?
It is indeed. It's an original Rivers drawing in full color.
Well, you know, because the other thing about small press books is that these books can look more or less the way the author wants them to, or the way the editor wants them to. And so frequently you've got these great covers and these surprising looking books. I know that on this show, we once had the editor of Hanuman Books, which are tiny, almost candy bar-sized books. And, you know, Doug Messerly at Sun and Moon Press makes a beautiful little book, kind of handbook, and a whole series of rediscovered fiction. The kinds of things I want to draw attention to is that nowadays, now that we're living in an America in which the major presses, for instance, are letting novels by Thomas Mann go out of print. By Thomas Mann. They're being reissued by the University of California Press. We're finding that it's not just the new writers, but the literary past. The whole history of the avant-garde is being kept alive by the small press. So I want to mention some of those, too. One of my favorites is an English press called Atlas that is bringing into print frequently the only translations of Surrealist classics. Can you tell us about their newest, The Automatic Muse?
Yeah, here's a wild book. In the 1920s, when the Surrealists were first experimenting with trance-induced writing and other attempts to do what would later become called automatic writing, this book collects four novels by four of the people that were most adept at writing out of trance states, writing spontaneous composition, as it were. And Robert Danneau, Georges Limbourg, Michel Leiris, and Benjamin Paré are the authors. Are known as Surrealist poets. Leiris was a famous ethnographer and Surrealist ethnographer. And this is a characteristic book for Atlas Press, who really specializes in books on Surrealism and Dada. They've done a Dada almanac. They're coming out with a book based on Georges Bataille and the school of Acephale that he was one of the members of.
Next up, one of my favorite books in the world, now only available from Exact Change Press. These are very beautifully made books. This one is by Denton Welsh. It's called In Youth Is Pleasure, and it's published along with a previously unavailable in America diary novella called I Left My Grandfather's House. What we find when we open this book is that it has a foreword by William Burroughs, who acknowledges that Denton Welsh is the reason that he's a writer. Welsh was really the first that I know of writer to be openly gay in his fiction, and these books are very extraordinarily beautiful and elegant evocations of sexuality before one knows what it is. The prose style sort of reminds me of Jane Bowles, and once again, this book, In Youth Is Pleasure, is carried by Small Press Distribution, which is an outfit out of Berkeley, California, that gathers together the work of small presses and makes it available both to bookstores and to individual buyers who order through them. I talk about them because it is so important for the literary life of America that these books be made available. They're frequently the places where the really interesting stuff is coming from. There are also writers, great American writers, who've never made it to the so-called major presses. Can you talk about some of them?
Yeah, certainly. The Ted Berrigan is a very good example. Ted Berrigan's a poet centered in New York who died in the early 80s, and all of his books, from his very first book was a classic, The Sonnets, and The Sonnets was published in a stapled format the first time around. It got picked up very briefly by Grove Press in the 60s and then went out of print again, and he's published numerous books of poetry through small presses. We have a memoir written by a great friend of his, Ron Padgett, who's also the moderator of the Ginsberg-Kenneth Koch panel.
I want to point out that probably my very favorite contemporary American poet, Kenward Elmslie, has never had major distribution. So if you want to know the absolutely crazy world of the Kenward Elmslie poem, play, fiction, novel, you have to seek him out. It's the kind of thing where, how does this start? I had heard Ken Word read in Los Angeles. I was absolutely amazed. There was no one whose language became so funny and so complicated at the same time. I bought some of his books. He's a poet who sings. I bought some of his records. I've seen him on videotape. He is, to me, a culture hero. I've seen him perform his musical comedies. For us, you know, a little book that came to me recently from Bamberger Books, tiny one, a little poem written in memory of his buddy who just died, Joe Brainard, a poem called Bare Bones, was just published by Bamberger Books. This is, in a way, you know, a poet's memory reaching out to the small audience that reads him, and it's a kind of collective mourning or collective newsletter that goes on in books from small presses as well. But I wanted to ask you to speak about a special section of the small press distribution catalog, which is works by Americans who are considered to be culturally diverse. This is another great service that small press distribution provides.
Yeah, we're seeing, like, in particular, one thing I can point to is a real renaissance in the West Coast that's starting to take place now of young Asian writers, Asian American writers. And we have a new press that's actually centered in New York that is just coming out with their first book this spring. It's a big anthology, the Kaya Anthology of New Asian North American Poetry with Canadian Asians as well. And the title of the anthology is Premonitions, and I'm really impressed by this book. It's an incredible 600-page anthology. A lot of the work is very experimental. A lot of it is the kind of thing that you will not have seen labeled Asian American in the past. And there's visual work included. There's some really beautiful, beautiful poetry from 60 authors. And this is really like the first exclusively Asian American small press that is really going to be producing a substantial number of books in the next few years. And there's someone to really watch out for, Kaya Press out of New York.
I'm speaking to Stephen Dickerson, the sales director of Small Press Distribution, whose 800 number is 800-869-7553. They are the largest distributor of literary small presses in America. Now, I'm curious, who do you take to be, you know, I don't crawl around on my belly as much as I used to. Who do you take to be the writers that people might be looking at if they wanted to get a glimpse of what's up and coming in American fiction and poetry?
There's a real incredible array of fiction writers and poets. Like we talked earlier of a husband and wife, of pair of novelists from New York City, Tom LaFarge and Wendy Walker, who both have written these amazing Baroque novels and series of short stories. Wendy's latest book is called Stories Out of Omari, that has a kind of North African Arabic conceit to it, but very interwoven, almost like Persian carpets, her writing style. Incredibly, and at the same time, she gets almost into this vein like Raymond Roussel, a very surrealist, strange kind of writing, but very, very elegant and beautiful. And you know Tom's work quite well, I think.
Well, I want, what was her first novel called, her first book of stories?
The first book is The Sea Rabbit.
You see, I fell in love with that. You know, for some reason, things that derive from fairy tales, I don't know why, have always been appealing to me. And so when I read the stories in The Sea Rabbit, which are sort of Hans Christian Andersen crossed with something, something inexplicable and something truly original. I fell in love with Wendy Walker and her books, which were published by Sun and Moon Press, which operates out of Los Angeles and which is distributed by Small Press Distribution. And then I was told that her husband, Tom LaFarge, had a fantastic nature, too. Well, you know, he's been at work on a multi-volume novel. The first was called The Crimson Bears. And again, you know, there it is for me, you know, those bears. And his newest book, Volume 2 of The Crimson Bears, is called 100 Doors. And, you know, again, a kind of labyrinthine, mythological, hallucinatory plot and counterplot and secret enemies and Alice in Wonderland and naive bears wandering through the avant-garde underground literary world made by, I don't know how to say it, a surrealist avant-gardist fantasist. And his name is Tom LaFarge, also published by Sun and Moon. And, you know, in this packet that the people from Small Press Distribution sent me, I found a book of poetry inspired by the old Dr. Kildare series. But this is, you know, a book of language poetry. We're warned by Ann Lauterbach that this is generation negative X plus one. And the poet's name is Stacy Doris. The arch enemy of Kildare, Dr. Ben Casey, makes his appearance in these poems as well. You want to tell about Dodie Bellamy?
Yeah. Dodie is a San Francisco writer, and for the past several years, she's been writing a long epistolary novel of letters that are written by the heroine of Bram Stoker's Dracula, who is a kind of counter persona to Dodie herself, and Mina Harker. And so The Letters of Mina Harker is this large book that is in the works, but the first small book that is excerpted from it has recently come out from Talisman House in New Jersey, and it's titled Real, The Letters of Mina Harker and Sam D'Alessandro. And in this book, Mina Harker is engaged in a very impassioned correspondence with a young writer, young gay writer in San Francisco who is dying of AIDS. And
well, I want to point out that this, in a way, is a new literary form. Here is Dodie Bellamy writing as Mina Harker. She's writing chapters of her book in the form of letters. She mails them to a correspondent who in turn responds to the chapter and determines the flow of the novel.
Exactly.
It's not just one correspondent she's been writing to. Over the years, there are writers all over the country who've provided bits and pieces of what feels like a chainmail novel. And, you know, the other great thing about small presses is that frequently we find an 80, 90, 100-page excerpt. I think of John Hawkes's segment of his adventures in the Alaskan skin trade, which was published by Burning Deck Books, another wonderful small press. So it's your opportunity to find out things before they've happened. I have been a dazed participant in watching that creative process and finding a book that I know very well the sections of become totally different when you see it published as a whole. I'm talking to Steve Dickinson of Small Press Distribution, and we're really talking about the world of books that are sometimes not found on the shelves of your bookstore or your library, a whole world that you have to really encounter for yourself. But it is the world, as we say, the place where writers in development and writers who have achieved things pay back. Can you talk about some of the books by writers who go back to the small presses to get, you know, Robert Duncan, for instance, mm-hmm. did so many, many times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, maybe the best example of this is William Burroughs, who a few years ago we did a little checklist, which was called Bill and Ted's Excellent Checklist. And it featured books by William Burroughs and Ted Berrigan, both of whom we had about a dozen items by. William Burroughs has had, you know, books published by small presses throughout his career. Often they're little things that you will not find in one of his larger press books. Often there are taped recordings that we have of readings of him and so on. But that's perhaps the best example.
Well, it's one of the ways in which a writer who's, say, graduated into the world of so-called big lead publishing can pay back a small press and keep the press really alive and afloat, because these are people who are really existing on the skin of their teeth. You know, a small press editor puts all of his spare capital into the publication of books he loves. How many copies do they make of these? Anywhere between 50 and 1,000. Sometimes these editions are extremely, extremely small. Sometimes in old days the books used to sit in the editor's garage, because once he published them, he didn't know what to do with them. He didn't know how to get them circulated. When small press distribution formed, suddenly there was an index in the form of the small press distribution SPD catalog of all of the books of literary interest that were coming up from these garages and underground press and mimeograph machines, and on the other hand, very elaborate deluxe editions of very beautiful books. And suddenly one could find them by getting in touch with Small Press Distribution in Berkeley, whose 800 number is 869-7553, and asking for their catalog. Tell me, what's the future of small press distribution? How do you stay alive?
Well, we do receive some NEA funding. We're this odd entity, animal, in between a business and an arts organization, because all of our presses are artistically oriented, literary oriented. We are a nonprofit corporation. We qualify for grants and gifts from individuals. And so we have a good number of writers and readers that send us small donations throughout the year. We, as I said, we get a grant from the NEA, and the precarious nature of the NEA these days is certainly something that we're concerned about. If the NEA were to fold, it would be really difficult to figure out what would happen with a lot of these small books and small publishers.
I've been speaking to Stephen Dickerson of Small Press Distribution. What we've sort of just been doing, I realize, has been sort of like being a bookstore over the air. I've been trying to tempt listeners to explore the world of the books that you often don't hear about because they're not advertised. And unfortunately, outside of small publications, they're never reviewed, and yet they are the seminal American books, the big surprises. And you know, I think that listeners to a show like Bookworm want to know about people like the people at Small Press Distribution. And thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you.
My associate producer is Melinda Siegel. The engineer today is Bob Carlson. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next week on Bookworm.
To the jungles you can go in books. To the land of ice and snow in books.
As you ramble through the pages, books will take you through the ages. Back to days of old when knights were bold in books.
Books, 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 books. Books. Books can be funny too.
And say, books tell you everything. They're your treasure, friends in prose and rhyme.
Now with Book of the Mouse, Bob Carlson.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is made available to the public radio system by SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.